it's really fucking difficult in terms of trying to be four people in one. And that is essentially what you are. You have to be the businessman, the family man. You have to be able to cut hair. You have to be able to teach. You're working on products. You are this kind of Swiss Army tool.
I can probably describe someone's parents just by
just based on the what they're like.
And what they're like at work.
Do you know what? That's absolutely perfect, because if you was to look at my work ethic and so look at my parents, they did everything they could to get us out of the bit of a shithole area that we live.
My main goal in the first year was not to lose money.
Did you manage it?
No.
That does make me feel better.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and I'm here today with Alan Beak and, of course, Johnny Barber. We're going to talk all things business, I hope. I think there's a real misconception about barbering, that there's barbering and there's business. And you two, over the last decade plus, have managed to juggle being behind a chair, cutting hair, actually doing
I'd say managed very loosely.
And running successful businesses. And that's no mean feat. And I think, you're both successful at being businessmen. I think younger guys coming in and an awful lot of older guys struggle with moving between the two, that they either suddenly become, I'm the business side, or they never quite manage to pull it off. How do you two manage it? How are you juggling being a barber and being a business? Okay, let's start with that one.
Me to go?
Go on.
I mean, you're asking the wrong person in terms of balance, because that's one of the questions you get asked so many times, like, how do you balance home life, the business side of things, and, not just even meeting your clients' expectations, but exceeding them to continue your growth of your business. And it's really fucking difficult in terms of trying to be four people in one. And that is essentially what you are. You have to be the businessman, the family man. You have to be able to cut hair. You have to be able to teach. You're working on products. You are this kind of Swiss Army tool. And to try and have all these plates spinning at the same time, it's challenging. It's like you're sliding downhill, and the faster you go, the more points you get, but the more your ass twitches.
Yeah.
But it's something, it's like a labor of love. We do it because we enjoy it. And then every now and again you think, fuck this, I don't enjoy it anymore. And then you have to either have a little break, which, I had a break from education. I had a break from traveling as much. And I wanted to focus on my clients. Johnny said earlier something that what really, really like puts money on the table, or food on your table, sorry, is the people that walk through your door. And I wanted to dial everything back and just focus on the service, not focus so much on social media. I wanted to show them the mirror and make sure that they were happy, rather than before I showed them the mirror, take my phone out and take a picture. I wanted to make sure that they had value, and to show them that they were appreciated. And connecting back with my clients, I think I love cutting hair. I love teaching. I love working on the product company. I love doing everything. But essentially, I think barbering is about human connections. It's about making relationships. Even with other barbers, we spoke about when we first met. Obviously, we've just met. So, and I'm sure that we'll have a relationship and, continue it. I think that for me at the moment is where my head's at, is creating relationships, working on them, networking, just to see kind of who's going to make me happy. Who's going to make me enjoy this industry again?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I never, ever considered myself a businessman. I mean, I'm a shopkeeper, first and foremost. And I think, people talk about, separating barbering and business. I don't think you can, right? Because, everything you do, anybody who works for themselves with a shop front or a company, whether they're a plumber, whether they're a plasterer, if you are the one responsible for bringing in the money, then by default, you're a businessman, in theory, right? So this crap of like, people say, I want to focus it. The business is barbering, and barbering is the business. That's what we've done. You know, we've done it since I've done it since I was 14. I'm sure Alan wasn't much older than I started, right? But like, we were mentored properly by good bosses. Do you know what I mean? That was number one. Number two, I think what's happening now, and you know, we sound like old dinosaurs here. You know what I mean? I think you probably have the two most polar opposite people in the industry. Like, you know, and Alan is the nation's sweetheart, and I'm what I am. I don't know what I am, but
I've got the angel and the devil on me.
I've heard plenty of stuff, but I don't give a fuck anyway. But the thing is, for me, you know, the business of barbering is becoming very, very dirty. You know, it's almost embarrassing to say you're a barber now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It is. It's embarrassing because everybody looks at barbershops as either a fucking
money laundering
or these fucking young fellas who think they're God's gift, right? At the end of the day, we're service providers and we provide a service, right? And Alan mentioned there, I love cutting hair. Mm. Like, the amount of times I hear people, oh, I don't want to be behind a chair forever. Well, fucking get a different job then. Mm. You know what I mean? Don't do it. I'll cut hair until the day I drop.
But you have, yeah, you've grown a huge brand. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think probably, you know, in the top handful of names that people would mention, Barber comes out
Absolutely.
As a utterly recognisable brand. You've got a chain of shops independently owned across the country.
Mm-hmm.
There's not, you know, you're in a very small gang, really, of people that have
it
done
is,
that.
But...
And you've still done industry stuff and all that. You know, you spread yourself across. And hey, you know, while we're talking about spreading yourself too, but there's the journey. You must. It can't come from a central. Does it come from a central belief in yourself, is it accidental?
It's riding a wave.
Yeah,
you ride a wave, right? Number one, yeah, what you mentioned there sounds great to hear it, but the reality is, it sounds more impressive than it is.
Mm.
It's not that impressive. Right, it, you know, from the outside in, it is. But we're like whether you got one shop, five shops, 10 shops, 100 shops, everyone is still fucking dreading the next fucking budget, the next guy walking out with no notice, the next guy fucking not turning up to work on a Saturday when his column is fully booked. You know, so everybody has the same worries. Whether you got 1 or 100 shops, it makes no fucking difference. So, I mean, I chose when I came over to this country that I wanted to build a brand, right, and. The reason why I wanted a brand, I didn't want my name behind it because my shop in Ireland had my name over the door. And as soon as I left it, the fucking arse fell out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like, no, the guy who took it over did a great job and he built it back up again. But before I sold that business to him and it was still my shop, it got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And all of a sudden, he actually rang me and said, listen, you know, I don't need to tell you, but you probably know the shop's not doing so well. I say, I know, yeah. He says, look, I'm going to take it off your hands. I said, yeah, please do.
Yeah.
That was it. And then I could focus wholly on what we were doing over here. But that was a case of, like, I came over here like a dog with two dicks, you know what I mean? And I rub people up the wrong way, but I don't know why I did, because I kept myself to myself for a long time.
You grew very quickly, wasn't it? I mean, we were talking
just
about
like
this
sprang
earlier.
Onto the
you
scene.
Know, you kind of appeared and,
yeah,
and this
but,
huge expansion that I'd not seen in any industry, in any hairdressing at all.
But I didn't know anybody. This is what I'm saying to you, right? I didn't know anybody within the industry. I didn't go to any industry events at the start. You know what I mean? I cut hair all day long. I stayed in my little apartment. My wife and my children were back in Ireland. I didn't go out. I don't drink. Mm. I don't, you know what I mean? So I didn't do anything.
But your brand instantly had a demographic the second that you landed.
Yeah, but
as soon as you like exposed.
It was over time though, wasn't it? It was at the time. You know what I mean? I think I hit it at the right time. I think, you know, timing was a massive factor in it. And I think the fact that I said it from day one, I set out my stall and I sold to who I wanted to sell to. And the people who liked it, loved it. The people who hated it were never my customer anyway. So I didn't care.
But do you split your time though? Do you go, these are my chair days, these are my business days?
No. I cut hair every day.
Yeah, I cut hair every single day.
You run the business in between cutting haircuts. And
yeah. Exactly. Honestly, what Johnny said before, hitting the nail on the head, it happens by accident. You're a victim of your own success. You create something, people come. Noah's Ark, if they build it, they'll come. And you know, if you're building a brand, and that's exactly what me and Reese wanted to do, none of our names had to be a brand. There had to be reason behind it. And, you know, we didn't want I mean, I didn't say we didn't want to become as big as we did, but we have conversations now is that there's nothing you can do. You're almost like trapped in going ahead and doing everything that you can.
But once that will something, I really hear that. Certainly, I'd say most of my career has generally felt like I'm chasing the ball that started rolling.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to learn the skills as I go. And sadly, a lot of the skills I learned came at a price. They were generally picking myself up after kind of scraping my knee and banging my nose and all that kind of stuff to get an idea of the business. Yeah, you know, Johnny, you were saying about mentors. Mm. Did they mean to mentor you business-wise? Or was this kind of just from being around and watching what they did, just working for strong?
No, the business, the mentoring is like, I say the word loosely because it's the big word now.
Yeah.
You just watch everything. I mean, when you're young, you're like, you know, to cash up. My first business, right? Like, it was a fucking small shop. I had four chairs, only me in there for the first year, right? But every day when I cashed up, right? Like, it was no cards at the time, right? Mm. So, like, it was like a little fucking savings box, right? So I put the rent in this little box every day. The bit for the rent went in there, the bit for the VAT went in there, the bit for the fucking light went in there. And it was all little bits. Mm. And if there was anything left over, that was my wages.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I ran it from. Like, oh, my father always said to me, he said, make sure you take what you need, he said, but make sure you need what you take. Mm. I'll never forget when he said that, like, because he said, you know, there's no one going to mind you here now. He said, you're the one responsible for the money. Mm. You know what I mean? He said, you know, there's no one going to be paying you on a Friday, only yourself. He said, so make sure it's fucking there. He said, but at the same time, he said, some weeks it won't be there. He said, so you don't fucking spend
but
everything.
That's a really good point, because there are points when you're running a business that there isn't the money there.
Yeah.
You know you've got to make sure the staff have been paid. You know you've got to pay the landlord. You've got to pay the electric. You know, you've got these things are going to stop the business existing next week. Mm. And you tend to be the last one on the list.
Yeah.
I had two of the most stern. They started off as hairdressers and then they wouldn't even call themselves barbers. I mean, this is obviously how like we differ completely and they differ completely to both of us as well. They call themselves men's hairdressers. They were like the only people in our town, probably in the city of Manchester, that were doing that. And they ruled with the iron fist. I mean, I was on my hands and knees, scrubbing skirting boards. If I had time, which I would make time, because I'd done everything, I had a bucket of cold water and a bucket of hot water, and I cleaned the cars. I had scrubbing brushes in between their alloys. And honestly, they literally did. And they hated me turning up. I never turned up late. I think I turned up late a couple of times. And then, you know, I was never left to leave early. Even if there was nothing left to do, I waited until 5:30 or 3:30 on a Saturday and they let me go. They were my friends. They were like parents to me and they were great, but they instilled a work ethic that absolutely I love to death right now. Like I wish I could find it in, I do find it in other people sometimes, but I don't think as much as what I did. And I always take pride in that. And it's hard to pat yourself on the back when you've worked so hard and you've put so much effort into what you've done and you've sacrificed so many things. And then you look back and you are hard on yourself because you want everything to run smooth. And sometimes I think, do you know what? When I was that young, my work ethics always stayed the same. At the moment, I do go through stages of like lack of motivation, but I just know full well, it's just because I've got a lot going on.
But at the same point, if you're struggling, you've still got to enthuse the people around you.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really tough, you know, it's almost like kind of schizophrenic point that you as an owner are sitting there kind of going, I've had enough. I'm sick of this. But then you're coming into work having to kind of
I don't know what it is like over here, but in Ireland, you know, you don't fucking bring your dirty laundry outside your door,
yeah.
Right? This is the fucking problem as well these days, right? Work comes last to most people, right? The amount of fucking people who ring me, I can't come in because my fucking dick. Are you fucking kidding me? Shut up and get into work. Stop being a fucking dickhead, right? And it's like, now you can't even say that to people, right? No matter what the fuck, right? At the end of the day, it's too easy not to work now, right? Because we're in a position in this industry where decent barbers are like fucking gold dust. Mm. Like, as Alan said there, he never wanted to be as big as he is, right? Or get. I wanted to be bigger. I wanted 100 shops. You know what I mean? I did.
Yeah.
But I figured
out. You were going to do it when you first appeared, fella.
But I tell you, after six, I had six, at one time I had seven, and I knew that was it.
That was it.
That was it, because you cannot get the fucking staff. Yeah. It came to the stage where I felt like I was working for those cunts, right?
Mm.
Like, I have probably four lads who've been with me since the start. They are my fucking right arm. They're the best.
Yeah.
Right? I have probably 6-7 people I can rely on throughout the business.
Mm.
You know, the rest are, you know, don't get me wrong, they do well. They work hard when it suits them. Mm. I mean, but that's, I think, I have kind of, my wife really is the one who kind of speaks the most sense into me. Like, she goes, love, it is what it is. Yeah. You know what I mean? She, like, my wife is very, very strong. And, like, she's probably a lot stronger than I am, to be honest. You know? And she's the one who kind of puts common sense into me sometimes, because she goes, when do you think that people are going to do what you want them to do? Mm. Like, she knows who my right hands are. Like, you, like all the lads with me forever, like Fish, Josh, Ryan, Costas, Rui, Franco, like those boys, Luke, they've been with me forever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And they are fucking bud. If I could clone them, Jesus Christ, I'd have a million shots.
It does come down, our industry does come down to graft, whichever way you slice it, every conversation I have.
But these are the guys, like, you know, it's funny because you meet fellas throughout, you know, I worked for Johnny for 6 months, he was a dickhead. Oh, he didn't pay well. I pay well if you work well. Very fucking simple. It's a simple transaction. The more you work, the more you get paid. End of fucking stuff, right? It's the same guy, it's the same type of guy is the one who has the problem. If I was so bad, why do I have guys working for me for 10 years plus? Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not bad, right? I couldn't tell you the last time Josh asked me for permission to do something.
Mm.
Josh does what Josh wants to do. Fish does what Fish wants to do. Luke does what Luke wants to do. Costas does what Costas wants to. Why? Because I know they will make it up somewhere along the line.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right? If I ring a shop on a Monday, Josh there, no, I went home early. All right, Jack Ryan, no bother. I don't fucking spaz out, because I know for a fucking fact he might be in there at 7 the next morning.
Yeah.
Or he might stay at 8 o'clock. He'll
be making it up somewhere.
He'll make it up somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, this is not baby. Like, but other people, I feel I'm fucking babysitting. I go, fuck's sake, lads. How many more fucking times? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, this is what I'll ask, right? Come in on time. Cut hair. Sweep up. Shake hands. Lock up.
Mm.
Do it all. Do that 5 times a week. You won't have a problem.
Yeah. But, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's actually fucking simple.
I think when you're to get that, does that come, you know, if you take the core people in your businesses, does that comes from...
Comes from your parents.
From them, or does it come from you guys?
Yeah, everything. Yeah. It's always nurture, isn't it? Like, nature versus nurture.
Generally, people who work hard come from hardworking families.
Absolutely.
Very, very rarely. Like, I can probably tell you, you know what I mean? I can probably describe someone's parents just based on what they're like at work.
Do you know what? That's absolutely perfect, because if you were to look at my work ethic and so look at my parents, they did fucking everything they could to get us out of this like bit of a shithole area that we lived. They both worked, they both grafted.
Mm-hmm.
They still work now. Mm-hmm. My mum works on the product company. She's probably my biggest fan in the world. I can guarantee she'll be crying her eyes out when she watches this, listening to me talk about her. My dad, I'll just tell him, he'll be going to work anyway.
Yeah.
Still, and he's, you know, they're both in their 60s. Well, they worked so hard for us as their kids, and then they continue to.
Is it seeing that? Is it that common? Is that because you've seen them wanting to work for you? Doing the same, that you want to take it for your kids, for the next generation?
You owe them. Do you know what I mean? You owe your children. Same way as, like, you know, this new approach of balance, right? Balance is great once you're at the destination. Then you can have your balance. Mm. But people want to be successful. You know what I mean? And you know, I'll do anything to be successful. But they're still fucking giving out about the hours.
Mm.
The hours are the fucking hours.
Yeah.
We're working with the public. You know, we work around them. They don't work around us. This new, and it's a big social media trend at the moment, people taking the piss out of customers. It drives me fucking bananas.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? People go, oh, fucking hell, he wants this haircut. Yeah, listen. You will get the customer that you attract. That is the number one law, right? And I say it to guys all the time. People come to me all the time. I get a lot of guys from TikTok, and I get a lot of... Like, sometimes they're the wrong customer for me, right? Because... And I explain to them, I say, right, forget about the barber, forget about the brand, forget about anything, right? What you need to do, if you want a new barber, do your research. I don't mean reviews. I don't fucking put any fucking, I don't put any thought to reviews. Reviews don't mean nothing to me, right? They're a moment in time. A good review, 9 times out of 10, people ask them for them. And a bad review, someone's really pissed off and it's fucking, it's a jerk reaction and they're pissed off and whatever, right? So I would always say to someone, go to a shop, look in the fucking door. Mm. If you want to look like the people in that shop, that's the barbershop for you.
Yeah.
If you don't want to look like those guys, that's not the barbershop for you. Right? My customers and Alan's customers are probably way different.
Mm.
Because we do a different type of work.
Yeah. I mean, like we've got Killian, he's literally, I could literally throw a pair of clippers and it could land in his shop. That's how close he is. You've got Danny, who's up the road, but look at Danny's persona, look at Killian's persona, his shop and Killian's shop. We're completely different. There is another 4 barbershops in, and like a 5 barbershops in about a 400 meter radius from where I am. And our clientele is completely different. We've never, ever been on a main road. We've never kind of welcomed walk-ins. We've always wanted to have people that book in. The clients that we want are the people that know us or know of us. And in terms of social media, yeah, you know, mine's pretty decent, but it's not just, people will say, will you share this for me? And it's to do with someone in Oldham. I'm like, I've got fucking 30,000 followers from Brazil. I've got 10,000 from Iran.
Yeah.
Like, what is me posting that on social media in my local community going to do other than make me look stupid? But the point is, even though my social media is good, it's worldwide, it's global, it's not in my local area. If you want me to share something, I'll do it on Facebook because that is local.
Mm.
I don't ever post things on Facebook to advertise things in the shop because the shop runs itself. And the best form of marketing is word of mouth. People coming into the shop are using it. It's like when we sell products, I don't really post about the products anymore because it's word of mouth. Yes, other shops use our products and other people, it then translates that, you know, if they don't have it in stock because they've not kept up with their orders, then their clients will buy it off our website. And that is part of our strategy, really, to make sure that other barbershops do supply them. And if someone needs a product that they don't have, then they buy it for our website.
Yeah.
And it's always there.
Both of you have done that. So you've both built up incredibly strong businesses. But now both of you have stepped into this. Obviously, yours has been going a little bit longer, but there's this huge world of product ranges.
Yeah.
Both great products, both great looking products. But, I mean, I speak to so many people who want to do it. It's so expensive to get into.
It's horrible.
It's a whole different side, a whole different business. It's completely, you know, you aren't doing the same. You're not doing the same business. So if we're switching that, is the barbershops running themselves now, or do you micromanage them still, or is the product range run by somebody? How do you run those between haircuts?
The salon is micromanaged by myself. You have the likes of like Aiden, who's next to me. He jumps in there and helps. We have an apprentice. We have a junior. They know their jobs. They know their roles. They know their responsibilities.
And that system is now in. Do you feel the same that the shop's going to open and the machine's turned on? And you know exactly how it's going. You've put that groundwork in.
Few of them, like Manchester, Liverpool, run themselves. London more or less runs itself. You know, this place runs itself. You know, Leeds, you know, it's no secret. You know, give me a bit of a pain in the arse sometimes, but you know, that's all learning.
There's always a wayward child.
Yeah, but they're good kids, really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They are good kids. You just need mentoring is the wrong word. I'd like to say beaten, but you know, what can you do? You know what I mean? But you know, I think
when spinning plates, there's always one that needs a little bit more.
They're going to get. They're getting there. They're good lads. They're just sometimes they can.
But if that machine's running and you feel confident with it, and obviously you know. Ignoring the pounds and pence, but yeah, the system's running. You feel confident. You can sleep at night knowing tomorrow morning, shop's going to open, whether you're there or not, the machine's going to run.
Yeah.
You've got this other side of it, which product range can't work like that. There's so much more, I mean, just more money pouring into it from the beginning. Isn't
it? It's a longer game.
And so much can go wrong with it.
It's a longer game. I look at the product company as a lottery ticket and a pension.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I'm in no rush to make money from it. My main goal in the first year was not to lose money.
Mm. Did you manage it?
No.
Thank you.
You know,
that does make me feel better.
You know, the second year we did okay, but see, we're doing it on a pretty big level. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like everything I've ever fucking done, you know what I mean? I think I'm better than I am at it before I started. You know what I mean?
Yep.
With the
it's like lying on your CV, telling them you can do something, getting the job, and then fucking learning to do it.
Yeah, but you know what?
Yes, I can horse ride.
Yes, exactly.
Richard Branson said, you know, if you're offered an opportunity, say yes and learn how to do it later, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's one thing, but I hate throwing fucking inspirational quotes around, but, you know, everything started from nothing, right?
Yep.
Everybody has hair or everyone has a fucking face, right? Mm. If you do this right, you know what I mean? And if you do it, you know, once you get over the initial, like, I'm going to make £1 million a year, once you get over that fucking nonsense, right, it becomes very, very real that obviously the cost of this, you know, versus the return and the margin, right? You know, profit, sanity, turnover, vanity, yep. right? You can turn over fucking £1 million to £1 million, £3 million, £4 million, £6 million. But if your overheads are £7 million, you've lost £1 million. Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, let's talk whiteboard maths again. You know what I mean? You know, it's not about what you take in, it's what goes out. And people need to understand that. You know, that's why I hear all this fucking nonsense about, oh, well, you know, you got to charge this, you got to charge it. It doesn't matter what you fucking charge, it's what you pay out.
Yeah.
Is ultimately,
yeah, what you're left with.
What you're fucking left with. Yeah. It determines whether you fucking sink or swim. Right? And it's the same with the product company. The product company, like, the fun bit is the development, you know what I mean? That's
testing,
the bit we know about, right? We both know, like, we've used products for years and we both work for the same product companies over the years, right? But, you know, well, we both, and everybody has an opinion on what product should be used, right? So Alan likes what he likes, I like what I like, but ultimately, you know, it's our job then to sell it to the people who want to buy it, right? So that's why, you know, people are attracted to different brands, right? McDonald's, Burger King, both fucking burgers, right? But Five Guys is the best burger of the lot. Why? Because that's the customer they want. They want the guy who doesn't want to fucking eat shit for £5. But there's other people out there, they're happy to eat it. Some people have no fucking choice. Yeah. They have to eat it. You know what I mean? So, you know, you've got to look at it with those kind of eyes. Who do you want to sell to? Number one, right?
But is that where it came from for both of you? Did you have that customer in mind, or is it absolutely tuned into your brand
yeah.
to put into bottles? Is that
I always wanted a product company.
Yeah, same.
But eventually, what goes in the bottles and how the bottles look was just as important to you
as
absolutely,
your brand. That's what they buy.
Your brand?
Yeah. That's what they buy. That, listen, you got to sell it 1 million times once, right? So it has to look good. Right? But it's selling it 1 million times twice. That's the fucking hard bit. Yeah. It's relatively easy to sell it once, you know, at a small scale, right? But small scale won't make money.
No.
You got to sell it at a fucking really big scale to make money, right? And you have, you know the crack, right? You got to look at fucking pennies. Mm. Pennies when it comes to down to, like, formulation costs, right? The formulation cost for some of my products, right, is fucking ridiculous. But for the product to perform the way I want it to perform, I have no fucking choice, right? So I have the price for one of my particular products is here, right? Now, at the moment, I make each product at 10,000, right? I won't get another price break until 20,000. After that 20,000, I probably won't get another price break till I get to 100,000 units, right? Now, if I get to 100,000 units per run, per product, then it becomes a different problem. It's still a problem, but it's a different type of fucking problem. Right, then it goes down a little bit. But when that goes down, if you're selling 100,000 products a month, your advertising cost is through the fucking roof because nobody buys something they can't see. Right, so if you're not spending money on advertising on the internet, it's like going into Boots and somebody coming along with a fucking curtain, putting it down over your product. Mm. The internet is the biggest shop in the world.
Yeah.
Right. People think, oh yeah, get a website. No one sees the fucking website. Why? Because Google is a business. Do you know what I mean? Amazon is a business. If you don't fucking pay them for advertising, they're not going to see
it. They're not going to show it.
They're not going to show it. No. You've got to fucking pay handsomely for it. And that money, that's your margin. That's your profit for a long fucking time.
And yours is, you've been around longer with your range, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean.
Are you feeling, do you agree? Is that pretty much?
Yeah, 100%. In terms of, I mean, I don't pay for advertising, sponsorships or anything like that because simply, can't afford it.
There's not the money there.
Nope. So we don't do.
And this is reliant on your, like you were saying, your margins. That's where you're still making money out of your range.
Yeah. It makes money, not a massive profit because the turnover is so high. Then you've got your overheads. You've got your storage, you've got your actual orders themselves, then you've got your VAT, you've got your business rates on the entire building. It's rent to the actual, the overall building, and then wages, and but it doesn't pay me anything.
No, or me.
I'm the sole advertising marketer. I do all the invoicing, and that's, you know, a lot a day. And the person, my mum is the person who does all the packing. So between myself, my mum, and the apprentice Jack, we pack all orders. We've just done thousands of units going to Hungary. And that was 35 boxes that we have then to bring from the storage room down into the barbershop. All them boxes are there. All the other day, there was about 47 boxes just in the shop. And people are walking in, stepping over them, all labeled up, ready for FedEx and TNT and UPS, DHL to pick up. It is a family-run business. And we get people message and say, I ordered online and it's not turned up yet. It's been 3 days. I'm like, well, fuck's sake, you ordered it on Friday. It's business days. It's now Monday. Use your brain.
And
my mum's really good. My mum's worked in customer service for years. And she was like, she'll explain like, you know, she'll explain every single time. We are a family business. Alan does this. I do this. And then we have one other person who does it. And we do all that between us, in between clients. I work 4 days one week, 5 days the other, cut hair all day, every day. If you've seen my Booksy, I'm literally booked out from
the
9.
The Booksy plug in there.
Oh, got to get that in there.
Other booking systems are available.
I know, Booksy showed me a lot of love for forever, so I've always got to mention them. But
that's exactly that, though. You are still grafting. You're both behind chairs. You've both, you know, you've got a product range that's underway. You're in the first year, second year. Of launching
nearly 3, you know.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Sorry, I do apologize. Yeah, but you know, it's work. It's more work, a point where you're still wanting to take on that challenge of something else. Is this something you've got to prove? Is this something you just feel the urge? Is it an opportunity that presented itself and it had been stupid to say no?
Well, I just remember how much I was spending on product.
Right.
So I had fucking huge accounts, right? And I remember some of the products we used, like American Crew we used for a long, long time. American Crew hasn't been as good a product as it was when it first came out. When it first came out 25 years ago, the formulations were different. When they were first sold, formulations changed. Then they were sold again, formulation changed again. You know what I mean? And they're still a very good product, but, you know, for that amount of money, what am I doing? What am I doing? Because, you know, you get nothing back out, you know, you get nothing back from these people because the margins in products now aren't huge in wholesale. Alan will tell you, wholesale, there's no margin there, right? So to sell products in the shop, the most you can hope for is that you cover your consumption, right? That it costs you nothing to have it there. As in, like, you don't lose money by stocking a particular brand. That's the goal, really. Like, there's no money in retail because barbers aren't natural sellers.
No.
You know what I mean, right? So there was a lot of stuff being used, overused. Obviously, things that go for a walk as well. You know what I mean? It's only natural. And I said, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to do it myself. I always wanted to do it myself. But I could never. I went to several different labs. I went to probably about 4 or 5 different labs, and we got to a certain level with some of them, and they just couldn't go any further, couldn't push any further than I wanted. And I said, right, I pulled it. Then eventually found this other lab. It came in as a recommendation by a customer of mine who used to have his own product development company years and years ago. He was an older guy. He put me on to this guy, but this guy won't touch you unless you spend decent money. So I said, right.
That's always the thing. There's always that minimum order, and they won't go anywhere near you unless you pay for this. Unless you pay for your own packaging, unless you do this and put everything up front.
So you're properly in the shit. You're in up to your neck before you can see the land at all.
Like, if this doesn't work, I'm fucked.
Right.
I'd be 100% honest.
Yeah. I've had it before where we'd like create a new sea salt spray and, you know, you've got thousands and thousands on order and you've got this happening, that happening. And then before you know it, you've paid for your packaging, you've paid for your labels, everything's arrived. And they send you a sample, the mock-up, and you're like, no, they're the wrong nozzles. They're not right. They're the wrong color, wrong shape, wrong mist. And you're there with all this stock and you're thinking, what am I going to do? I have to send it out. I can't send it back because the nozzles, the tube's been cut. Everything's been sorted. Everything's labeled. And you've invested all that money into it. So you've got to try and make it work. And then luckily enough, that occasion, it ended up working in our favor because when I tested the original one, after a couple of times of using it, you could see that the inside of it was starting to fray a little bit. So it was almost like making it bubble on the hair. So it ended up coming out stinking of roses in that one. But we want to rebrand our jars at the moment. We're probably going to dial down. It's like, you know, we get 80% of our profit from 20% of the products, Pareto's law. Mm-hmm. And we're at that other fucking, you know, percentage I want to get rid of really and just focus on the best sellers. But we want to rebrand it. We've done like a little bit of like a semi rebrand at the moment just to show one, our original branding, because I really like it still. And then we've gone kind of a bit more contemporary with the look now and the brand. But even for us, we have to invest in that packaging. So once we've got all these samples and we've got them, we've got to buy a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, you'll know, you've got to, and we've got to buy all that separately. We've got to buy it, store it. Then it goes to the formulators. They'll fill it, goes through a curing process and it weighing, labeled, packaged again, and then sent back to you. And
then you get to be able to sell it.
Yeah.
And get to keep a penny in the jar.
Yeah. I mean, and like what Johnny said, like I remember we would be using that many products in the shop because we were big on styling.
Yeah.
We were one of those shops that, yes, everyone had sea salt in their hair. Everyone had hairspray. Everyone had like two or three different products. We were cocktailing them. We were like making like different products from just using, I'd use 50% of Essential, 50% of Satin Volume 4. And I was creating styles, putting pictures on social media, and everyone was like, how do I create that look? Mm. Like, well, this tool, this product. And then that is what was creating the selling point. That was the USP was the education I was doing online and showing people what potentially you could have your hair look like.
Yeah.
But have you found, though, all these years of you doing it, this feels like you take this business more like a business.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, Do you know what I mean? Is that because there's the gun to your head of fucking hell, there's some money in this, or because you've had 10 years or more experience in running?
I would have a different opinion than on that one. I don't think people, especially men, should have to use more than one product. Right. But that's, again, that's a preference to me. And I think it comes down to taste level.
We're going with we're getting things ready now for some resistance.
There we go. But no, but again, everyone has the right. Everyone has the right. But I don't see, me personally, the point of it. Right? Mm. I think a lot of it is faff. But at the same time, if it works for the person, if they're happy to do it, then fucking more power to them. But I mean, that's why for me it's kind of right, okay, well, this product you don't need. You would certainly need to layer it. I do believe in like a little bit of this before you blow dry your hair, a little bit after, right? If that's, you know, if you want that natural look or whatever. Or you dose it a little bit differently, like, you know, you don't put in a whole lot, you put a little bit, you know. So several applications, but certainly one product. You know what I mean? Mm. But again, that's a preference for me. And that's the route I want to sell.
Presumably that's one of the sales pitches for
that's my route to market.
For your route and yours. And presumably if I put your haircuts next to each other, we'd be able to guess whose was whose. Because your styles are your styles, which is your brand. Yeah. And that's that. So you've come to the point where really you're both very confident in what your brand is.
Yeah,
that I should know what.
But there's people
out
there.
What Alan Beak's about, what Johnny's about. I know those brands. Yeah. And that's fermented down into your product and presumably throughout your business.
Yeah, but there's guys out there who want to use three products.
Yeah.
There's guys out there who want to use one. So I'm selling to the guy who wants to use one. Yeah,
yeah. He's selling to the guy who wants to use three. But that's the perfect thing about Johnny's brand and my brand. And I could be next door and at 12:30 we could meet and just go and have a quick coffee because we've got 15 minutes, but we'd never be in competition with each other because Johnny's got his demographic and his clientele and I've got mine. And that's it. People will go to whoever they want to go to. Mm. If it's, you know, people like Costa, people like Nero and people like Starbucks, you just go to wherever you're going. All you've got to do is make sure that whoever does walk through that door, you're giving them exactly what they want. Mm. And fortunately for me, the guy that comes in my door wants a pre-styling agent. They want to be able to put sea salt in their hair. I've shown them how to blow dry it. They want to use Essential because it's dry and it's matte. And then they want to lock it in place with some matte hairspray. And you know, obviously for me, that works. And it's
that becomes the crux of what your product brand and your product range is about and where it's from.
Yeah.
We're coming to the end of part one. The one thing that I wanted to speak to you guys about, which we will be back for part two, is, and maybe a little roundup just to finish this off, is what's given you your legs in this business? How can you still both be right at the top of your game 10, 12 years into it, if not more, with so many other younger brands and so many stores and so much else going on in this rebirth of the industry? I'm giving you time to think.
I don't need to think. I'll tell you straight out.
Yeah, I'll go straight out.
We're staying around because the universal standard barbering is shit. It's fucking dog shit.
Right.
Right? There is examples of amazing individuals, right? But generally speaking, the end product from universally is shit. That's why we're still there.
Still here, because I think we've both got that fucking, like, the ethic where you build something and you build that castle and you fucking stand there and you stare at it and you, like, you're in awe of what you've done and what you've built. Being ruthless, being relentless in the pursuit for what you want. Like Johnny said, he wanted it to be bigger. I've got to where I am right now, and it was, you know, pretty much gold medal syndrome. Literally spent 4 years on getting everything that I ever wanted, won the gold medal, and then had that deep depression afterwards, sacrificed, lost things at home, lost things at work, and then took a step back and thought, actually, I'm going to focus on what I think's most important right now.
Yep.
And yeah, the standard of work is fucking dire coming out of most academies and at the moment, because
the academy should be closed down for a start.
It's the lack of standard of work and the lack of standard of service. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now it's more important to take a video of your fade than the conversation that you've had with someone.
Trying to get somebody to actually clean their chair, polish the bottom of their chair, trying to get someone to clean a sink, trying to get someone to wipe the top of a product. Mm. It's almost like you're asking them for blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But for both of you, I mean, these are very, very traditional, old-style fundamental beginnings of even the roots. You know, I'm older than the pair of you, but even back to my roots, that was the start point of service, customers right, customer feels great, but the quality's great, and the cleanliness and the... On that note, we're going to bring this to an end. Please come back. You can feel we're only just warming up. See you for the next half.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.